It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, as we do every week. And I greatly appreciate their time and their expertise. And related to that expertise, let me just remind you, do not hesitate to give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And as I remind you each time, spell out the word and, A-N-D, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Here we are, Lockwood. Lockwood, today we're going to talk about homeowner associations and related issues. So many people now in our area, in our great communities, live within a setup, if you will, where their property ownership is subject to a homeowners association or other kind of corporate structure. And it's important that that we kind of decipher some of the problems that sometimes arise in these circumstances. And so, Wes, we have a lot of cases in this area, don't we?
Yeah, you know, it kind of seems like on the on our radio program here that oftentimes our topics are somewhat directed by what the hottest issues are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, the issues regarding estate administration, asset protection, you know, litigation in Superior Court, partitions, you know, all these things, they're always hot in our office. It seems like, you know, we always have a lot of that we're doing. Recently, it seems like we, in, you know, kind of my part of the office, the litigation part of the office, I've had more condo association, homeowner association issues, and really kind of have a lot of that going on right now. And, you know, that kind of comes from all different angles. It could come from, you know, we represent the developer, and maybe there's interest in transitioning the control of the association, you know, of the subdivision, I should say, or the condo association or the condo development over to a organized association. Probably in more cases, we represent groups of property owners, folks who are have concerns with regard to, you know, whatever the issues are, you know, how their dues are being used, the assessments, whether they're proper, changes to the covenants that maybe are different than what they thought they were buying into, you know, issues with regard to, you know, relative to a certain condo, just tried a case with regard to a contractor who wasn't paid, and all the interaction of liens relative to that, won that case, and now we have to deal with the issue of getting that contractor paid, you know, from the property. Mm-hmm. It just, there's all types, you know, of these association, condominium association, homeowners association cases, you know, that we deal with. And, you know, Cecil Lockwood, when folks come in and kind of sit down and start talking to me about what their issues are, in most cases, these folks are, you know, just, you know, non-lawyers normally, a lot of times retirees, sometimes not. And, you know, they have a general understanding about how things work. But the devil is always in the details. And it really is that way, Cecil, I think you would agree, in everything that we do. The details are incredibly important. So, you know, having a very strong grasp, an understanding of how the law works with regard to these different associations, whether it be the North Carolina Condominium Act under 47C, or whether it be the Planned Community Act under 47F, whether it be the Nonprofit Corporation Act under 55A, you know, whether it be, you know, interpretation of the particular declarations of covenants bylaws. All of the interplay of that is something that oftentimes is very confusing to people. And, you know, sitting down with them, gathering the evidence or the facts, and then putting them in the best, you know, position is something I really enjoy doing. And, you know, kind of it's always challenging, but it certainly is easier now than it was my first day I started practicing, because I've been doing this for 25 years. Believe it or not. So, yes, it definitely is an area that we deal with, you know, quite frequently. Just the, so that's kind of the introduction to it, Lockwood. But, you know, kind of the way that these associations are set up, these developments are set up, of course, as we talked about in the program before, you know, the reason they're set up this way is, you know, the developer, if we're talking about a normal subdivision, you know, what's their interest? Their interest is to buy the property, develop the property, sell the property, make money. They're in the interest of wanting to make money from their project. And so what they're normally doing is they're finding attractive land, or they own attractive land, and they're putting together, you know, a plan with regard to how they propose develop to development. There will be a plat map that's put on record that shows, like, where's the swimming pool going to be, and where the roads, you know, tennis court, you know, if there are those common area type things, breakdown of lot 1 through 50 or however many lots. So that's put on record. And then about that time, the declarations or covenants, which are the restrictions on the use of the property, which of course we can talk about, but you know, the generally the purpose of that is to create uniformity, so that we know, you know, is this going to be mobile homes, or is this going to be, you know, stick-built homes, you know, that are of a, you know, a higher level of construction. And you know, what are limitations with regard to setbacks? What are limitations with regard to things if it goes as far as, you know, paint colors?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the right to assess people for their dues so that we can maintain the property? So those declarations go on record. And then what happens is the developer normally is selling off lot. And at some point in time, depending on the language in the bylaws, but more notably the covenants, the declarations, there's a transition once the developer has sold a certain amount of lots to transition the common area, mm-hmm. like the roads, over to the association, which is like a nonprofit association, which is then going to govern itself going forward. And there's a lot of things to take into consideration with regard to that. Okay, you know, what is the current level of repair as it relates to our roads? The association mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily want to take on roads that need repair. You know, what is the current situation with our stormwater permit? Are all of the things that are required by the state relative to the stormwater, are they done, or is there work that needs to be done, or there's a maintenance that needs to be done? So, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be looked into before the association, you know, gets organized as a nonprofit and then start and then takes on this own. Because once they take that deed for all the common property and there's a transition and a transfer of that control, then the developer is pretty much out of it. You know, so that's kind of the way this gets, you know, set up. And then as these issues come to me, then, you know, a complete understanding of the laws with regard to this, bylaws, declarations, articles of incorporation, you know, these governing documents in the Plain Community Act statutes, then the interplay of all that is going to dictate, you know, the advice I give folks with regard to, you know, how we address whatever their particular issue is.
You know, we're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, and that was Wes Collins there just a few moments ago, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And, you know, Wes, as you're getting into homeowners associations, one of the questions I have, of course, goes to the control that the HOAs have. Of course, once they take control of the common area, then the responsibility falls to all the property owners. Is that the conclusion?
It does, as far as control goes. And basically what happens is that at some point in time, there is normally a meeting that is called for purposes of electing a board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I see more frequently than I would like to see is that in a lot of cases doesn't really take place in a very organized fashion. Because, and I think the reason why is because, you know, the developer is interested in developing the property.
Right.
And selling off the lots. The developer is really not in the business of making sure that the association does everything perfectly. Okay. So in my opinion, it's incumbent upon the association. When I say the association, I mean the property owners who have bought in the subdivision, to get competent legal counsel and at the right time, so that everything is organized properly. And what I'm referring to is that noticing up the proper meeting, so there can be election, so a board could be put in place. So then you've got an actual group of individuals being the board who has the authority to speak for this association that's going to govern itself. You really don't have any organization or control until that meeting takes place and you have a proper board. So sometimes that doesn't take place and homeowners associations just are kind of waving in the wind. All they know is that they bought property in a subdivision. They're paying their dues probably to the developer or a property manager, and that's just kind of the way it's going. Well, it can't go like that forever because the developer is going to want to get out and going to want to not have any involvement, you know, anymore. So,
you know, one of the things that I would, you know, add relative to this, you know, very good conversation, Lockwood, is that when you are a member when you have property ownership that is subject to real property ownership, meaning, you know, your home, mm-hmm. many times, sometimes your very principal residence, and it's subject to these associations, or subject really to any kind of restriction, if you will, you have to be engaged. It's just like, you know, we all have to make sure our gutters get clean. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it's that important. You cannot take a passive position relative to this home ownership, which is subject then to an organization. You're going to have to stay informed. The officers of these associations are very powerful people, you know, and the executive committee, if you will, depending exactly on what the structure is of the association. But they can make decisions, you see, that permeate the entire ownership, you know, 200 owners, if you will, or more, okay? And here these 200 owners are, you know, at home at night, watching their favorite program, dealing with their children and all of the important things of life, and they're unaware that a decision has been made that affects their ownership and their property. And we've had several cases in our office where these are the facts, that the homeowners are not really completely and totally informed. Now, it's difficult, you know, to keep everyone up to date in a situation like this, you know, a democracy, if you will. It's not easy. But as a homeowner, if you're a member of one of these organizations, you really are challenged to stay in the loop of information. I know, Wes, you agree with that, correct?
Absolutely, and you have that opportunity, and the Nonprofit Corporation Act helps you because the association is required to have an annual meeting. So whenever that annual meeting is, if the association is organized, then that's your opportunity to go ask questions. I mean, for example, if there's some type of lawsuit going on with regard to the association, like the case that I was just referring to, where the contractor has not been paid, and that is, you know, working its way through litigation, then it's appropriate to go, you know, ask questions about that, because the board is going to make decisions, but those decisions may very well affect your pocketbook at some point in time.
Right.
And then the board would have the authority, or have the, not only authority, but they would have the responsibility to communicate, you know, candidly, you know, with you about that. So you need to be involved. And on the other side, the association needs to be forthcoming and candid with folks. Otherwise, they can put themselves in a position where potentially they're breaching their duty. And that's a breach of fiduciary duty we've talked about. It's not doesn't apply just to executors and trustees. It would apply to board of directors and officers and nonprofit corporations under an association, you know, as well. Multiple topics here, but you know, another issue that I see periodically is amendments of covenants that maybe affect your rights and the property.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that in the event that the covenants that are on record say that you have to have, for example, 67% of the owners of the property to amend the covenants, and that an amended covenant shows that there was a 67% vote or higher in order to amend those covenants, that's just foregone. That just is a, yes, that's a proper amendment. That's just the way it is. It's of record. And, you know, you could have a situation where the developer still owns, you know, 67% or higher of the covenants and makes a decision to change them. But if you, the other 33%, you know, there that has bought in the subdivision may not like that covenant change. It may be something that's very significant.
Uh-huh.
It could be something that's entirely different than what the original covenant stated. I mean, let's say that you have a situation where the covenant state that this subdivision is set up for residential purposes only, and all the lots can only be used for residential purposes. And so you buy your property, you're relying upon these covenants, you're in a residential subdivision, and then the developer decides that the parcel, for example, closest to the road, he'd be able to make more money if he changes it to a commercial lot. Okay, so he tries to go through the process of changing the covenants to change it to a commercial lot, tries to change the zoning to change it to a commercial lot, you know, does these things. Well, there's a question there then. Was that reasonable based on what was represented in the original covenants?
Uh-huh.
And the answer to that question probably would be no, it's not reasonable, because it's inconsistent with what was represented when these other people bought. So just because there is a covenant change doesn't mean that it's an enforceable covenant change. It has to be a change that is consistent and reasonable based on what was intended in the original covenants from the subdivision. Now, I see all kinds of these type things. Like if there's an attempt to change covenants to increase the dues that maybe are limited. Oftentimes we see in our covenants, you can increase the dues, but it's limited on how you can increase them. Only 10% per year, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you exceed that, that's not going to be enforceable. So, I've seen cases where there's an attempt to take a residential lot and change it to for commercial purposes, kind of like what I described, but maybe a road for further development. I mean, that's a question about whether you can do that or not. So, this is just such the tip of the iceberg as far as the things that I deal with and see in homeowners associations, because there are a lot of laws and North Carolina under all of the various statutes, the hundreds of cases that have come down from the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court of North Carolina dealing with these issues, where a lot of times things that are going on in a homeowners association that may maybe upset property owners don't realize that they actually have a strong legal leg to stand on to correct whatever the issue is, because what, let's say, the developer or the board has done is they can't do. They're not allowed to do it.
You know, so, I want a few questions for you, Wes, and of course that's Wes Collins. We're talking with Cecil Harville and Wes Collins today about the issue of homeowners associations, also known as HOAs. And Wes, you're talking about the situation where a developer or in the process of the transition from development to handing over all of the responsibilities and the deeds, basically, for all the assets to the homeowners association, makes changes. The residents who have already purchased and living in that community, of course, as you point out, have a claim. The point of the problem here is they now have to seek legal expense. They're going to have to seek legal services. They're going to have expenses associated with their complaint. What happens in those situations? Should they win the case, or this is all of a sudden there's a responsibility, as you pointed out, there's a financial responsibility. But what happens in those cases where the residents are contesting a decision by, in this particular case, the developer?
Right. Great question. All right. So two things. Number one, in the event that the covenants have a provision in them that allows for the recovery of attorney's fees for enforcement of the declaration or covenants, then depending on how that language is written, then any individual who seeks to challenge the action that the association is taking, or the association, if they're attempting to enforce the covenants as to a property owner, if that language for recovery of attorney's fees is in the Declaration of Covenants, then that would be a basis for recovering those expenses if you prevail. Okay, so obviously you would need a good attorney to analyze it closely to make a determination as to the chances, the likelihood that you're going to prevail, and to review that document, the language of the document, before you, proceed down that path that could certainly be expensive. That's one thing. So sometimes covenants don't have that language, and we're just in a position then where we can't rely upon that language, and therefore the statute that allows for recovery of attorney's fees under those circumstances. So you have also the right to act for the association. Let's say the association is doing something that is clearly not in its best interest, mm-hmm. or not consistent with law. Okay, so what you can do then is, as an owner, you can bring what's called a derivative lawsuit. And in order to bring that lawsuit, you need to put the association on notice of what your concerns are and what you're asking them to do to address this issue. And if they don't do it, under the statute, you're supposed to wait 90 days to give them an opportunity to respond and tell you what they're going to do. But under certain circumstances, you can explain why I don't have to give them the 90 days. So there's a detail there. But in the event they don't do it, and you proceed derivatively on behalf of the association, like to address, whatever the issue is. If they're, let's say that the association is, through its board of directors, is misusing insurance money.
Mm-hmm.
And you want, insurance money received from a hurricane.
Right.
Okay. And you have learned about this, and you want to address this, and you've delineated this, and you've asked for them to follow the statute and their covenants with regard to this, and they're not going to do it. Well, that hurts the entire corporation, because that insurance money is there for everybody.
Right.
Okay. That's the way that works. We all pay our dues. Our dues go to pay the premiums. The premiums go to pay the insurance. The insurance is there where we have loss. It's one policy that covers all of us. Okay, that's typical in a condo association. So, in the event they don't do that, they don't act properly with regard to their obligations, then you put them on notice. Then you can bring a derivative lawsuit on behalf of the association under a statute, which is 55A-7-40, and then that, if you prevail, allows you to recover attorney's fees.
Okay.
So that's another provision that the court could allow you to recover attorney's fees from the corporation, because the corporation should have done what you had asked them to do originally. So that's kind of a long answer to a short question there.
Actually, you bring up...
But like I said, devil's in the details.
Right. No, that's Wes Collins. And of course, we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins on the topic of homeowners association. I have one other quick question, and I've got an observation to make, and real quickly, but the question has to do with the board of directors. In light of the fact that there's the potential of disputes between the board and the members, the other homeowners, do the board of directors, do they face some, and you mentioned fiduciary responsibility, do they face, if you will, personal responsibility in some of these cases?
They can. If they act outside of what would be reasonable with regard to their actions, then yes, there could be personal liability with regard to them and what they've done. So it's yes.
Right, yes. You know,
if they've acted within reason, and maybe it's a gray area as mm-hmm. far as how they've acted, then sometimes you can't get to the personal liability. It needs to be something pretty blatant and egregious for it to be rise to the level of a personal liability. And there's also a rule called the business judgment rule that protects association board members, you know, and their actions. So, but there's, again, everything I'm mentioning here, I mean, this is in a 25-minute radio program this morning, but everything I'm mentioning, there's a lot more detail to every aspect of it. We're just skimming the surface.
Understood.
Kind of understanding how it works.
Understood there. My conclusion, or my observation, Wes, and again, we're talking with Wes Collins there and with Cecil Harvell, of Harvell and Collins on homeowners association. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to buy a condo or move into a development, I obviously am going to work through an attorney for my real estate closing and things of this nature. But I think my first comment out of all of this is, okay, I want my hands on the documents for the association. And before I even decide to close on the real estate, I'm taking that to an attorney to say, okay, where are the holes in this? Where are the problems before I join this association? And by buying the property, I automatically am agreeing to join that association, am I not?
Yes, you are. And one of the things you can look for as a buyer is, and you can't opt out. I mean, if your property is part of it, you're part of it. That's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So once you close, you accept that deed, you're a member, that's the way it works. So one of the things you can look for, however, is that you can certainly look for the residential property disclosure statement, which is required by North Carolina law on residential properties that are not new construction. And there's information in that document with regard to whether there are any special assessments coming up, whether there's any information with regard to the status of what normal assessments are, any information with regard to, let's say, is our sewage treatment plant, you know, needing upgrade. Obviously, you can ride through the subdivision and look at the roads and kind of get an idea if they're in good shape or not. If they're not, then maybe, you know, there would be assessment coming at some point in time. You know, you can talk with the president, maybe get some information, but that the documentation, the residential property disclosure statement, is something that should give you, you know, a pretty good idea of what the issues may be that you may be buying into that may hit you in the pocketbook. So that would be something that I would recommend. But also understanding, you know, the dynamic with regard to the covenants, the declarations, even talking to the property owners out there would be beneficial if you could, you know, work that out. So, yes, once you buy in, you're in. So buyer beware.
No question. And the other aspect of this is that you're making a major investment, and it could be life-altering in many regards. I think that's a very important conversation we're having this afternoon with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, and that was Wes Collins. We're talking about homeowners associations. Wes, Cecil, it strikes me that there are a lot of developments happening, many of them involving HOAs, condominiums, of course, and I think that would be a topic for a later date as well, because then all of a sudden there's a common wall, if you will. There's common structure in addition to all of this that involves probably investments that someone in another area of the building isn't interested in financing or supporting. So I think this is an important conversation. I want to thank Cecil and Wes for this program. Very important for the audience to know. If you're joining an HOA, do take all those. Granted, you can review them, but I would suggest take them to an attorney. Get an attorney's opinion right out of the gate. Cecil, Wes, as always, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Lockwood.
It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station.